It's June, Johnny, and it's time for another Talk About That.
Doing it.
Yeah, man. We are entering a new month, into the summer months.
Oh, man.
Warmer
weather.
Doesn't
it feel like this year has just flown by?
It's been just one of those good years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's like some years just have a thing where you're like, man, where does the day go? Just so much getting done. People are out there living their lives.
Nothing to see here. I wrote the other day in a book proposal. I was talking about the state of affairs in the world today. I was like, it kind of is like Lieutenant Frank Drebin when he's standing. I described the whole scene. He's standing in front of the exploding
fireworks
factory, you know, and people are, I mean, it's just like this spectacle behind him.
A spectacle.
And he's just standing there, his back to it. Nothing to see here. Moving along, folks. I was like, that's kind of how it feels right now. But, you know, hey, man, it could be worse, Johnny. It could always be worse.
Don't say that. What are you doing?
My electricity went out the other night again.
You poor thing.
I'm going to tell you, I had to, we had to make an adjustment there. I had to really check myself and kind of repent, to be honest with you.
You got to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
I pouted like a little baby. Like, this is the fifth time in, like, the last...
I remember in the Book of Lamentations, a lot of that was about loss of power.
It was. I think
it was like, how long, oh Lord?
Will we not have our microwave?
Yeah.
No, I just...
Remember when the prophet Jeremiah lost Wi-Fi, and he wouldn't shut up about it.
Well, again, I get it. I mean, that's why it's that confession of like, it was just the straw. It was like, because we've lost it 3 to 4 days several times. And I was like, I don't think I can do this again because my mom lives with us. It gets hot upstairs. I got to deal with keeping all the food from ruining. Like, you know, there's like, you just go into to the whole process again. And I was just mad. I finally was like, I've been working on the whole rejoice always, even in your sufferings. I was like, I am so immature and dumb. Like, this is so dumb. That's what I'm saying.
You think it's suffering.
I can't even get through a power outage.
And it's funny you use the word straw because that's another thing. They're trying to take our straws away, John.
Oh, my goodness.
Taking the straw is a straw.
The infringement upon our personal liberties.
Listen, don't give me some paper straw that's going to disintegrate. I want a plastic straw that's going to destroy the world.
I tell you. You know, they have metal straws now.
People that carry their own straws with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bring it in. It's a little collapsible. I've seen the ones that like are a little collapsible.
But a straw that you couldn't take on an airplane because it might be considered a weapon. I think that may be too far.
You could hurt somebody with that straw.
Absolutely.
Remember the straws that you would get with the icy that have the little scoop on the end? Weren't those the best?
They still have them, don't they?
I don't know.
When's the last time you had an icy?
Are those legal? I don't know. But those are contraband now.
There needs to be a name for that. Kind of like a spork. It's a sprawn.
A sprawn.
Sprawn.
It sounds like it's a superhero.
Yeah. Or it sounds
like, I am Sprawn. And he comes out of
it's a super villain.
A backstory. He lost both parents, not just the one.
Oh, my goodness. That's tough.
That is tough.
Well, when you're the child of a spoon and a straw, you know, the longevity of your parents' life was already in question.
It really was.
Both of those are disposable, Johnny. Poor Sprawn.
And isn't life in itself, when you think about it,
it's but
a vapor.
It is. They remove the paper and throw you away within a few
life
years.
Is but a paper. That's not... We're being stupid. I was going to ask you today, because I was thinking about this, because I have a niece who is 12, and she... I think she's not at the age yet that I reached, that most teens are. Maybe it's only boys, but I know girls, it has to happen, where you get that too cool for your parents thing.
Mm-hmm.
When is that? Has Sadie reached that? Is she getting there yet? Or is it going to be a thing? Because y'all haven't been in public in a while. So back when we get to public again, and you're at the mall, is she going to want to walk 10 feet behind you? Do you know the age I'm talking about?
I don't think we're there yet. I hope we never get there. I actually try to precursor her like, hey, you know, we never want you to be that kid. We're going to do our best not to embarrass you.
But sometimes it's not about you. It's a weird thing like kids. Yeah, and some parents are more embarrassing than others. But you've talked about like not trying to be the cool dad, but it's hard not to. Like you want to, you know.
Sadie is a snuggler. So that plays to our advantage. You know what I'm saying? She loves to, and you know, again, loves to take walks. Like today it's raining and I was like, well, we might not get our walk today. She's like, ooh, we could take a drive. Like, she wants to be together.
That's cool.
And spend time.
But you're her only option right now.
Right.
For companionship.
Yeah, I was her ticket out of here. So.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I hope not. I mean, again, she's very...
Do you think you're cooler than the other dads? It's an honest question.
I don't think I'm cooler than anybody. Like, here's what I think. I don't think Sadie is embarrassed of me.
But some dads are more embarrassing.
But I could do things that would embarrass her.
Yeah.
But I think
that's kind of fun, too. I would think that'd be pretty fun. Like, I don't have kids, so it's hard for me to even put myself in this position. But I just remember thinking, yeah. I mean, we drove, like, hoopty cars, too. So I remember thinking, like, drop me off a quarter mile before the mall, Mom. But part of that was the car. It wasn't just about her.
Yeah. We lived a quarter mile from the school.
Yeah.
And we never walked to school. Because, like, the whole road would be backed up with cars pulling into the school.
But you'd still go get in that line.
But, yeah. But we would walk home sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was super embarrassed by that. But there's not a line coming home of cars.
You're embarrassed that you had to walk home?
I was embarrassed that people would see me walking
home. To not get picked up?
It just made it doesn't, it's like shame and embarrassment, especially as a child, is very nonsensical.
Because you thought of what made you look poor or something?
I don't think I had any conclusions to it. Just being seen at all, doing something different than your peers.
You want to have a car when you're a high school kid, especially. You want to be seen as somebody
like
you.
Everybody knows we have a car. I don't think, like, it's so funny how logical I am now. Like, what do you mean? What were you thinking? Like, I think at that age, the embarrassment has no logic.
That's true.
It's just like, look, this is just something different than all the other kids are doing.
You're terrified of standing out. Yeah. We've talked about that before, about how when you're a kid, you're terrified of standing out. And as you get older, you're almost terrified of blending in and just being like everybody else. Like, at least maybe that's just me as a creator. Maybe some people aren't that way. They still want to kind of like, I just need to get to where I don't stand out. But I think to me, like, the idea that I would live a very mundane existence.
Yeah.
It's more terrifying to me than when I was a kid and I was afraid of standing out.
It's fascinating. Yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday. The whole 90s, 80s and 90s type, especially in evangelical culture, that you're told that you're made for something spectacular.
Right.
And
only you could do it.
Right. And people like you and I think, who have a creative bent, you know, we really, like, man, that makes sense to us. That really, like, aligns with what we already feel about ourselves.
But it's a lot of pressure, too.
It is. And then you start also evaluating your worth based off of those creative either gifts or those creative accomplishments. How far did I make it? Have I fulfilled that manifest destiny calling, whatever you want to call it? And I was thinking yesterday about that. Like, you know, I'm more content now. Like, I find more contentment in the mundane.
Yeah.
And I have to, like, separate the things I do, like, but I don't know how to separate the feeling that I want to accomplish something very unique and spectacular. I don't think that's gone away. In fact, I've tried to get rid of it. Like, I don't know how to get rid of that. Like, I do want to write the book that everybody read that was different than anything else. You know what I'm saying? I do want to, you know, lead in a way that people follow. And I think what I'm getting at is, you know, may just not be that the content of the topics made not need to be unique to me.
Yeah.
I think we were just having a conversation right here before we came on with somebody else, and they were talking about what to post or not to post.
Yeah.
There's
so much noise on social media.
Yeah. And, you know, you had the George Floyd, you know, just horrible thing that happened, and they're like, I don't know what to say. I don't want to feel pressured into saying. And I said, you know, one thing I do know is, instead of you trying to come up with your opinion of what to say, which is what we all try to do, what we can do is just express what the gospel already says. You know, it's always right. We can say the gospel says this is wrong and that we shouldn't do this. And so, like, I'm coming to that place of my creativity. The most important, maybe, I guess, contribution to the world that I may give, it may come through a unique expression, but it probably shouldn't be a unique amount of, it shouldn't be unique content. It should be content that already works for everybody, that was already true before I was born, uniquely expressed through me. So, like, there's that feeling that kind of releases the pressure. I'm not trying to now come up with a new gospel or a new way of living. I'm really discovering what was already there and the people way before
me.
You
put your stamp on it, though.
Yeah, and I'm finding a way. In fact, it says in... Oh, Johnny, I'm going to mess this up.
Oh my goodness.
It says
in Titus, maybe? You going to Titus?
It's not in Titus.
It's a short book.
I think it's in James.
Nobody ever quotes Titus, and it's upsetting.
Titus is a good book.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you can do it right now. Go for it.
I don't want to. Something about Onesimus is in there. Or one's emus, if you want to really.
Oh, one's emus.
One's emus.
Onesimus. And then you have
Onesiphorus?
Yeah. Onesiphorus was the other one.
That's where Onesimus lived. He lived in the Onesiphorus. Sometimes you can't see the Onesiphorus for the Onesa trees.
Oh, man.
Oh, Bible names.
Oh, my goodness. No, there's a Greek word that has to do with, it's just a word for work or for do.
Yeah.
But one of its translations is, so basically like fulfill your calling or go do the thing that God calls you to do. One of its true like meanings down in the depths of it has to do with the stage, like almost like a play. And like it really always spoke to me that the truth is the script of who I am in Christ is already written, you know? And my goal is not, well, I think a lot of us in evangelical Christianity kind of thought, what's my turn to say what this is? And it's really, it's my turn to give, the word was rendition. I give my rendition of that script, but I don't change it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like Shakespeare. Yeah. What scripture is that?
Oh, I have to go find it.
Because that reminds me of, who was it? Was it Shakespeare? No. Thoreau. That said, oh me, oh life, of the questions of these recurring. And then it's basically the famous part of it is that the powerful play goes on and you may render a verse.
Yeah.
You may contribute a verse.
When to me, it's less of me writing a verse.
Who wrote that? It might have been Thoreau.
It's less of me writing a verse and more of there is a script of the way to live already given to me that I need to learn these lines and deliver them according to my way. That's why you can have one actor play the same part and he totally breaks something different.
It's still his verse, but
it's a rendition, but it's not a rewrite. And that really freed me creatively. Like, I don't need to, listen, man, I don't feel the need anymore on a Sunday morning or whatever to like split the atom. Like, I need to really do a good job of completely taking what's already powerful and expressing it rightly through my own examples.
Three T's that go with it.
Right. Just
and
like
putting it into alliteration. Make sure it rhymes.
I don't do a lot of alliteration
anymore. I think if God, as he inspired people to write the Bible, if he had known how obsessed he would be with rhyming. You know,
he'd be like,
he had no idea that
he
would
start babble all over again. Like, you know what? I'm done with this.
Yeah, these preachers are really going to be obsessed with this having to rhyme. Maybe it's hip hop. Do you think hip hop culture contributed to that? Maybe like it needed to be wrapped up. And I mean, rap, like both rap.
Oh, wow.
Works there. It needed to be wrapped.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, he didn't know. I mean, I guess he should have known. It's God. But I'm saying like, we've taken it. We need to like, it's because of our intellect, our human intellect. We need it to be, it's like the Brady Bunch. We talked about this. We can't watch a 4-hour movie, but we can watch 10 episodes of Friends in a row. Yeah. So that's kind of what the byline of the sermon does for us. It's like, all right, don't worry. These are all going to start with the letter P. So stay with me. And if it rhymes, all the better. It makes it even. So we've kind of conditioned our brains, maybe.
Yeah, it really does. I was real bad at it. And part of that was my education.
I don't think
background.
It's wrong, though. I'm not saying that to make fun of that. I'm just saying it's fascinating to me.
No, but I do it less now because, like, last Sunday I had one point. I was like, hey, I'm going to talk about one thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. And I'm trying to get better at, like,
one point. That's just a sermon. That's just that's not better to me, John. Give me two T's.
That's the point.
Give me two Q's. Nobody ever uses Q for alliteration.
You know what? Don't quit.
Don't quack. That's if you're a duck.
The reason I really stopped is when I went back. I would sometimes want to get kids together who I'd had for a decade.
Yeah.
And they listen to 50 sermons a year from Pastor John.
Right.
So if they were there from 7th grade till graduation, that's 6 years. That's 300 sermons, right. Not counting leadership retreats. Trips where I'd pull them aside for Devos.
Yeah.
And my guess is somewhere around 350. Mm-hmm. Some of these kids, like Seth or whoever, you know, heard through that whole time. And I would pull them together sometimes and go, all right, 350 sermons I've laid out my entire life, you know, for you. Can somebody remember one?
Right.
Can you remember one thing? And I've had a few kids who can remember, like, well, they don't remember what it was really about, but they'll remember, like, a funny illustration I used, maybe. Something I said accidentally that was wrong. They always remember that.
Right, sure.
I mean, that time that you cussed and you didn't mean to, you know, or whatever, like something like that. Very few. And then a couple, like, or something super illustrated, Remember that time you had that box with the candle on fire inside of it? But I don't remember what it was. You know, like, they just remember that, you know.
Like, that was fire safety demonstration.
Guys, that was,
that was not
helping
a
you
at
find
all.
The emergency exit.
That was stop, drop, and roll, the sermon.
Sometimes you got to stop, drop, and then roll away from the sin.
That's what you meant.
Stop doing it. Drop what brought you to it. And roll on through it.
When you grab the extinguisher of the Holy Spirit, you got to pull the pin.
What's the pin? I want to know.
I don't know what the pin is. It's a. You can't.
Guys, and isn't that just like our Lord? You know?
Before you spray it at the sin, you got to pull the pin.
Oh my goodness. This
work.
Is not that far off of some things that we.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. But you know what's funny? I remember, I may have said this before, but my youth group, the first youth group that I was in that I remember like really being impacted and wanting to like follow Jesus. I think about it all the time, but the thing that I remember is not how many kids were there. I cannot remember how many kids were in my youth group at all. The thing that we obsessed about the most, which was, we got to get 40 people here at least, because then it feels like something people would want to be a part of. Like, it was probably like 10 or 11 kids. I can't remember, but I remember that my youth pastor cared about me, and I really felt like he loved God, and he was trying to do this thing. And it impacted me. I don't remember the games we played. I remember a couple of games.
Yeah.
But I just remember, here's one thing I really remember a lot, is that I would come to him after service sometimes, and I would be like, I need you to pray for me about something. And I was almost saying it like, be praying for me. Mm-hmm. And he would always stop right there and go, let's pray right now.
Yeah.
And I remember him doing that like more than once, of me kind of almost saying, pray for me. I'm having an issue with my girlfriend, or I'm whatever. I'm failing this class in school. And he would go, let's pray right now. Yeah. And it was very immediate to him. He wanted to show me, I care about this right now in the moment. And that meant more to me. I remember that more than any game, more than any retreat, more than any sermon, that he cared about me. So I think that's the thing that we forget to do as leaders. We're like, let's make sure that we look cool, or let's make sure it rhymes. And really, it's just about being there.
Yeah. No, I think probably about, and that's encouraging, and I think kids do. I remember those things too as a youth. But I think probably by the time we got here, we had really, I knew that the growth, the need for growth, which is a thing, an unchecked box in my life all the time I got to deal with in church. It's the unchecked box of my church existence or of my life. I mean, I prayed that the other day. Like, there's a lot of things I can check the box and say, well, I've experienced that, you know, like church growth thing continues. It's still the evaluator. I just have to choose to disengage. It's how I'm evaluated, you know, quote unquote, my platform is evaluated by it. So if I pitch a book, they're going to want to know, oh, you're a pastor. Next question. How many people in your church?
Uh-huh.
So like I am quantified by it. Yeah. And I'm also, I feel somewhat, not powerless, but that it's not the right thing for me to seek. It's just not. I've spent too many years. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm not saying I don't affect it. I'm not saying it's random. I'm just saying God's able. And I have had a large ministry when I was a youth pastor before, comparatively, if you want to use that. It's not, he's proven he can do whatever he wants to do, put people in seats, not. But even then, when we had that large ministry, back to that, like, I remember that happened when we weren't looking for it.
Right.
And truthfully, that sounds real cliche, but we really didn't look for that. We started doing what you're talking about. We really tried to be there for one another and have them be there for one another. And
there's
not just
your next
based.
Book, bro. Stop looking for it.
When you stop,
that's what
you
used to say. That's what you always say to sing. When you drop and you stop, that's the thing people used to say when you're single. They're like, when you stop looking for
then
her,
then they'll be there.
That's when it's going to happen.
Oh my
and
goodness.
You're like, sure enough, I was on the toilet and there she came. The like, last place I expected.
Someone's in here.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, sweetie. And you just knew that's the one.
Hi, I'm John.
She totally encroached on your personal space. You're like, something about this girl. She saw me on my most vulnerable moment.
Tales all this time.
No, but you're right. But the number thing is hard because it's not the indicator. It's an indicator. Like,
right.
You couldn't go to a church and say, well, we have 10 people. We've had 10 people since the 1980s.
And say something's not wrong.
Say, yeah, you couldn't just be like, well, we're just doing what we can with what we have. Yeah. And then you listen to a sermon like, this guy's driving people away. This clearly is a problem. I think it's almost like it's an indicator. It's like you wouldn't go to your doctor and him go, your cholesterol is high. And you'd be like, listen, I don't really get into numbers, doc.
Right.
Like,
you know,
right. Your cholesterol is 500. Yeah, I don't really believe in that.
Yeah.
We just are going to live our healthiest life that we can with our abstract concept of what health is.
Although I will tell you, in my case, my doctor will tell me yours is familial and you really can affect it.
Right.
Like you, this is a, it's funny.
But he gives you a pill to help with it.
But he says it might not help. It might not matter.
If you could take a pill and grow your church numbers, would you do it or not?
Are you talking about church growth hormone?
I mean, I am.
So
CGH.
So, yeah, send it on. No, it does. You're right. And that's a thing for me, I believe. It is an indicator. It is a metric.
Yeah.
And but everybody else around me, I feels like to them, no matter what they say, it's the indicator and the metric.
It's hard because there's a lot of faithful pastors who will never have a church over 200, which, like, I think they said 80% of churches in America are under 200 people, right? So it's the majority of people don't have mega churches. And so there are faithful pastors who are doing the right things and even have, like, strong ministries, powerful ministries with small churches. And then we all know mega church pastors who just kind of fell backwards into it because they live in a great location where there's a lot of, like, young, I mean, there's just areas of the country where it's just easy to grow a large church. There's that. And there's the happy medium of, like, just be the best that you can be and pastor the people that God's put in your path, I guess.
Yeah. And I think there's a line there between, we are certainly as a staff, we want to grow. We believe God grows his church. That's not cliche. That's scripture. We also believe that we make disciples. We have a role. We believe that there's some mystery / sovereignty in the middle of that. From a personal standpoint, I know this. If I would have had everything in church growth that I wish I would have had, there's a good chance I wouldn't have done the things in writing that God wanted me to do to that level. Because it is a hard balance, even with the congregation our size. But I'm supported in it, you know, and I'm able to use nights, weekends, days off, those kinds of things to do a lot more than if we had a church of 10,000. I'm not sure. Because I know friends who have churches of 10,000.
Yeah, your responsibilities would be a lot more intense.
Yeah, and they're struggling to hold between the lines sometimes. And it's funny, our friend Mike Burnett, who's a pastor of the fastest growing church in America, you know, we just wrote a book that's in editing now with Zondervan.
You found a way to plug it.
JohnDriver.com. Anyway, I'm just kidding. And, you know, Mike, we talk about church growth in there a lot, and I love his perspective on it. From a guy who is a large church guy, it really has affected me deeply. He uses the parable of the talents, and he says, look, here's the deal. The Bible says God gave to each one of them according to their ability.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, that's so offensive to us today to say that. But the master, God in the story, it was a key point. God knows what you are capable of, and he gives you what you are capable of. And it shouldn't be some dig on your pride that he thinks you're a two-talent guy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I honestly don't know if I'm... Apparently, God thinks that we can handle this many people, and I'm not sure that we can. It's all his. It all goes back to him in the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
None of it was theirs. There's a real, like, this is not mine, and I'm just stewarding something for the time. And it shouldn't matter how much it is. It doesn't give me an excuse not to grow or to be wise in the way that I lead. But again, some church growth stuff gets gross for me in church planting because you and I both know guys, not know guys, but know trends where people are like, hey, we found out that Mount Juliet is the fastest growing city in America. Let's move there and start a church. Like, it was real. And the demographics there, they're young and they're of this race and they make this amount of money. There's their per capita. And it's like, it's a real, I'm going to take advantage of a socioeconomic situation where I know church growth could be easier, you know, as opposed. And then there's some, like, I have a friend right now who's about to pastor a church in a major inner city where it's a huge homeless population,
mm-hmm.
you know, and on purpose he's going to where, look, neither one are wrong. They're both good, and God calls us, and God gives us choices, and somewhere between there we find our way. But how are you going to evaluate his success,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think it's just a matter of getting to, I still have to deal with it, but I'm more at peace to say, look, I'm not sitting here not expecting to grow. I actually see growth. I just evaluated the number as one of the things. I want to make disciples. That's why we exist. We exist to be and make disciples. So can I see that today? How would I evaluate that? That's the real question the church doesn't know how to ask. One evaluates about how many people come to your church. Another evaluates how good the preacher is. Another evaluates by how much they read their Bible that day. Another evaluates it by their quiet time. Another evaluates it by how much they gave. Like, we're trying to go, okay, are there true biblical ways to kind of sharpen those ways of looking at each other? And we feel like in community we found all those things are good, but they need to exist in community. Because here's the deal. You can have a lot of those. I mean, again, I've written for some very wealthy people. And a couple of them have said some things. They said, look, when you have the means, writing a check is the easiest thing you can do to make it go away. But if you want to really care, if you want to really be generous, then giving your time or being invested in it, for real, learning about it, being invested in it with your time, that's giving. That's generosity. So the money matters, but it's not like the money suddenly makes your heart right.
Right.
It's just one example of, you know, none of these things we do can make our heart right. So by the way, I found that scripture.
Okay.
It's one you know.
Was Titus.
James. I knew it was in James. I was going to say James or Peter. James 1:22. Be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. So the word be, and I'm going to pronounce it as I see it. It may be pronounced differently in the Greek. Guys, I'm not a Greek scholar. I just have the internet. It looks like genomai, and it means to come into existence, to appear in history, or to come upon the stage. And then doers is poetis, which is kind of like poetry. It means maker, producer, author, performer, or poet. And so basically it's saying be, come into existence, appear in history, come upon the stage where you are, this doer, like you're doing something to what has been given to you, doers of the word.
Yeah.
You know, you are the performer of this. You are the poet of this. So get on the stage and give your personal rendition with your life, not just your words, with your life.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with the scripture in Ephesians that talks about how we're doing the good works that Christ Jesus laid out for us long ago.
Ephesians 2:10.
Right, Ephesians 2:10. So it's that thing of, it's almost like we're just falling into a role. It's like when you're doing something good, the reason it feels right is because it's what you were built to do.
Yeah.
And you're just playing that role now.
Yeah.
But you didn't come up with it.
Right. You get to add, not to the content of it. You certainly get to add to the expression of it. And that's the beauty of it.
It's interesting.
Yeah. But I love that, you know, Paul called it according to my gospel. Mm-hmm. You know, he would say that. And for him, he was specifically talking about those who were twisting the gospel to say that you could gain salvation by circumcision or by other good works that you did. And it's so funny, not ha-ha funny, Johnny, but, you know, we use that term, well, he fell from grace. He fell from grace. When somebody has a moral failure, has an affair, something like that, the only real time in the New Testament that I read the term fallen from grace or you have fallen from grace is Paul speaking to those who try to earn their salvation through their works. That was falling from grace, not those who sin and struggle. Those,
because they fell from a grace mindset.
Right.
They were judging by law again.
It's the exact opposite of the way we, in fact, I mean, not only the opposite meaning, it's the opposite intention. Mm-hmm. The intention of grace was that you recognize your sinfulness. It doesn't mean you run off and sin on purpose, but you will sin and you recognize your need.
There's your next book, bro. This is why you feel so much peace, is because you've already made enough things now where you're like, look, I'm good. This is why... You're like, I'm all set. This is why you feel less pressure now.
I do wonder sometimes how much of my feeling that I have fulfilled my role on this stage is tied to like creative works, you know, and that's something I have to, because my real role on the stage most likely is as a husband and a father, as one in community, and that these creative things are a part of what I do. But I have to balance that as well. Like, you know,
I don't know. I was thinking about that the other day and I even tweeted it, I think, and it was like, there's an old like African proverb that says when an old person dies, it's like an entire library burned down. Hmm. But my older relatives really never set foot in a library. So I come from hillbilly people. So it's like when one of them dies, it's like a Dollar General got demolished. This is how it feels. It's different. It's a different
it's
vibe.
A different feeling.
But it really will be a library for you because you've written like 12 books. It's going to be like a library burned down.
See, now I have to...
It's 13, 15 books, 82.
It's crazy.
Books.
I'm writing number 25.
Right 25 now. Books for John.
Yeah, but I don't want to see now. I've quantified and I've lost all the value of it. Oh my goodness.
Are you going to divide these books into testaments? Like when you get to a certain level, you're going to be like, this is the new.
When I turn 50, it's like, here's the new testament.
It's the new covenant.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, I don't know. Some of them, again, a couple of those were like children's books we wrote here, you know? But they did rhyme, Johnny. All of my children's books rhyme.
Well, children's books should rhyme.
Well, not necessarily.
But when you become a man, you put away childish things, John.
Well, you know. I still, listen, A Little Fish Named Nelly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind one day on the podcast reading A Little Fish Named Nelly to the listeners.
On this podcast?
Yeah.
No.
Why?
Because
I think
I won't let you keep hawking your wares.
I'm not hawking. There's no way to buy it.
Oh, that's true.
It's just something like that's a story I would love to share because I think they would enjoy that story. I read it to a publisher. That was the way we pitched it. Mm-hmm. And I can't get through it. I cry every time. Every time that I get to certain parts because it's so like personal to me with my daughter and with our kids that our kids from youth group kids, they were written for both of them. And it just gets me. And I've redone it now. It's shorter than it used to be. And I've taken out some of the modern things that were in the ancient story, you know, and kind of.
So you couldn't even get through your own book. So you couldn't. I need to do the audiobook. If it comes down to it, I've got a pretty good voice.
Oh, yeah.
I would be honored to do the audiobook, John.
Johnny, I think you know why I've called you here. So
this is.
I'm going to write a number on this piece of paper.
Okay.
And I'm going to throw it to you because we're social distancing.
Right.
As a paper airplane. If it makes it to you, you're going to want to open it up.
Oh, okay.
You're going to want to.
Is it a round number, bad joke?
It's a nice round number. Yeah, Laura has that joke. She always is like, because Laura wants to be in better shape all the time. I was like, honey, you're in great shape. She's like, yeah, well, round is a shape. She always says that by herself. Honey, you look amazing. So, but that's her. That's like a dad joke that a mother can get away with or a wife.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
Because it's like the self-loathing is in there. I hate that, though, that women are too hard on each on themselves. They're hard on each other and they're hard on themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Yeah, Curry's always just, they tear each other. And I do it, too. I mean, I have body image issues, you know, than most guys do, I think. Because I think we're raised in a culture that thinks that guys don't have those issues, and now we're starting to really become aware.
Sure.
That it's not true. I mean, there's magazine covers with ripped dudes on it, too, that we look at and go, all right, I'll never have abs. Yeah. I'm a jerk. Oh, fine.
Yeah.
And you just feel less than. But women, I think it's cultural for sure. I mean, even like, did we talk about the whole Zoom call thing where a guy can just like throw on a hat and like do a Zoom call with his bank?
Yeah.
You know, but a woman has to like feel like I need an hour to get ready because I'm going to be judged more harshly if I don't have makeup and I'm done hair. And I just think it stinks. It's unfair. And I don't know. I don't like it.
She's doing those calls now and she's one of the only females on like all the teams of managers and stuff, you know? And so she would be great to talk about this next time she's on because I mean, there's a lot.
I don't really want to hear from her. I just want to say that I understand her perspective. Can I just say I stand with her?
Can I say that I want to express her perspective for her? And
we're so aware of it, and I don't want to hear any more about it. I'm just kidding.
I would love it if she was here right now. Oh, my goodness. She would light you up like a Christmas tree. It'd be so beautiful.
It's fun. She's listening now, though, to the podcast, and in her mind, she's already thinking of comebacks, and that's fine. Because I'm obviously being satirical and very sarcastic.
This is obviously not being serious, everyone.
Come on.
Whatever you do, don't clip this out and go use it against Johnny on social media.
It'll happen. 20 years from now, all the things that we said that weren't woke enough for the new Byzantine standard by which we'll be judged 20 years from now.
Well, I do worry about that. There's 113 episodes behind us, Johnny, of things, and we do keep growing. You know?
Yeah, and we're growing as people, and we're whatever, and it's, you know, there's things,
Yeah.
It's like what's the old saying, don't believe everything you think? Like, I don't believe everything I think. Sometimes I'll have a thought, and I'll say it into the microphone, I'll be like, you know what? And then later on, I'll be like, that was a dumb thing.
Yeah.
We're growing, we're learning.
Yeah, I read a quote this week that said, the reason I write is so I can discover what I think.
Yeah.
You know, because for some of us, expression brings out. There's a lot of the times when I'm writing, I didn't know that was in there till it came out, you know, because the thought, it's like you're letting your thoughts flow visually, you know, on paper. So, but
I don't know.
No, we could keep changing, man, and that's okay.
Well, jokes are that way for sure. And sometimes you like to take the funniest side. Like, obviously, the thing I said about Laura is like, that's the most offensive thing you could say. So that's what makes it funny is I don't really feel that way. So it's funny, like.
And you know her and she would think it was funny. Right.
Sometimes I like to take an issue that's just like, even if it's a dumb, trivial thing and go like, everybody feels this way about this. Can I find the one opposite opinion and make it funny for the stage?
Yeah.
Like I was writing with some friends the other day and we were talking about a bit that I've never done on stage, but I'd love to do. And I'm trying to figure out a way to do it. And it is about like flies. People hate flies. It's just like, you know, they want to get away from my food. You're batting away the flies. It's like, get out of here. And I'm like, a fly is like they live 8 days.
Let them have a bite.
Like, yeah, like I feel like when I let a fly take a bite of my burger, I am granting his make-a-wish. That's how I feel as a person. Like, I've let him transition. Like, okay, buddy, here
enjoy
you go.
Your final meal.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not stating an opinion. It's just a thing of like, right, everybody feels a certain way about, and I'm trying to find, what's the one good thing about flies eating your food? And that's what I've come up with so far, is that it makes me feel altruistic when I don't bat away the fly. I'm like, you know what? Give him a minute. Let him lay some eggs and move on.
You had me up to that. Let him share it's one thing, but let him deposit something on it.
You don't want to eat some fly eggs.
Well, we probably do, let's be honest. So, but they are a delicacy in some countries, so I hear. So, tiny, tiny countries. Hey, I do have a serious question for you.
No. Okay.
Was Michael Jordan's pizza poisoned?
No.
You don't, because he insinuated, Tony.
He outright said it. First of all, that story since then, we've already talked about how I feel about that, about how it's not real journalism. And
I thought he let himself look pretty bad several times.
I think that if you knew how bad he really, I think that that's the ginned up, like, glossy version of Jordan. So I can only imagine what it was. In other words, if you had, if you knew they were doing a documentary about Barack Obama, about his life, and then you found out later that he was involved in the production of that documentary.
Yeah.
You would look at it differently. If same with Trump, same with anybody who has public purview. So anyway, all that said, the story, that guy went on, okay, the pizza guy, they found him. The real guy who delivered the pizza. He was on Colin Cowherd last week. And he said, look, this story's been going around forever. I made the pizza. I knew that it was going to go to the Marriott that night, and I knew that it was probably Bulls players. I'm a Bulls fan. I made the pizza because I wanted it to be perfect, because I knew it might be going to one of those rooms. He said it was me and one other guy, because I wasn't normally a delivery driver, so I had to get a delivery driver to take me. I was a working like manager or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I went to take the pizza. So this idea there were five people that showed up for the pizza, that was a lie. That was just, it's just grown. The story's grown. And the five people show up, and I'm like, oh, should I eat this pizza? Here's the other part. If you wanted to poison someone,
food poison them.
Right, but it's poison. It's you're treating it with something to make
you
somebody sick.
You sound like
sick.
Belle Biv DeVoe when you said poison.
Poison! What I'm saying is, never trust a big button to smile.
We listened to 90s radio the other day, and it was like, we listen to 90s radio a lot, and when they I know the song well.
Yeah.
I'm not proud of it, John.
No, it's...
But when it said, it's really kind of like well-written and articulate, and then it gets to that part. Uh-huh. Never trust a big butt and smile. And I turned to Laura, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, when you're writing all these great lyrics and this great melody and this great... Like, I don't know,
Tell me he's wrong, though. That's what...
I shan't say a word.
Okay. Here's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
Let's say you're working there, you find out. First of all, if you have no idea it's Jordan, and here's the reason people thought it might be, here's what happened. It was out of their delivery zone.
Right.
And so they go, we need you to deliver. It's the only thing open. And they go, we don't deliver there. And they go, it's for Michael Jordan. And that's what set it into motion. That's what the rumor is. So the guy knew. Let's say that happened. Let's say that's real. First of all, it wasn't real because he said he was fine. He was across the street, basically. He was literally like a mile away from the hotel. So that wasn't part of the deal. But if it was true and you go, I'm going to get him. I'm a Utah Jazz fan. I'm going to get him. I'm going to put some, what is it? What do you put in there? Let's say you're not experienced at giving people food poisoning.
Right.
How do you know that you're not going to kill the guy? I'm going to put just enough Visine in this to make him throw up, but not enough to poison him to death.
Yeah.
Like you're committing a crime, first of all.
Yeah.
Do you have old meat laying in the back that you're saving for the prank pizza? Like, what are we saying about this person?
Maybe they spit on it or something.
You believe it's true, I guess.
No, I was asking you if you believe it. I do. Here's the thing.
I think he was hungover.
Where I differ a little.
I think he was up late night.
Yeah, but I think he was hungover a lot of the games, and he was just fine.
Yeah.
I think he was super sick. He may have just been sick.
Well, they said they caught the flu game for decades.
Stomach bug or something.
Right.
I did not find it as like self-congratulatory as you did, because he did win six championships in the 2 years he was out. They did nothing.
I think self-congratulatory was the thing. I just thought his mindset towards like the way he bullied other players that were on his team,
I thought that came out,
and he thought it was for the greater good, and is unapologetic about it.
Well, now that, but again,
I just don't think he comes off as a sympathetic figure. That does not mean I don't think he's the greatest player.
That's the point. If he was able to be the executive producer of a film that let him look like an unsympathetic character, whether he's apologetic or not.
But I don't think everybody sees him that way. I think there are people who watched it and said, like, oh, he was...
Player on there. Now, even what was it, Steve Kerr or whoever said he was a bully.
Yeah.
And he did not accept second best from us, and we went and won championships because of
it.
They weren't going to win championships without him.
Yeah, but I just think there's other ways. That's the thing, is like the greatness, whether or not he had to be a jerk to be great, that's the hard part. It's like when Scott Weiland, this is kind of a stretch, but Scott Weiland, who was singer of Stone Temple Pilots, okay?
Yeah.
He fought addiction his whole life and finally overdosed. I mean, his family, on again, off again family, it was a terrible, he was not a good dad. It was just a bad situation because of heroin addiction. He dies. Now the rest of the band is left picking up the pieces, and they hear from tons of their fans this. Well, you know, would he have been as great a creator if it hadn't been for the addiction? Is that what that little bit of madness that fed the creative side is also what led him to those vices? And they're like, no, we wrote half these songs too.
Yeah.
We're good dads. We don't do this. We don't. So this idea that, like, well, of course Jim Morrison was going to be a whatever because he's Jim Morrison. It's like, no, LeBron's never been in the news. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, there's no affairs and whatever and, you know, punching teammates. I mean, there's people who don't like LeBron. I'm not comparing LeBron and MJ. I'm just saying, like, there are other people that can have greatness without that touch of.
But there was something, and I think that's what.
God, why do you love Jordan so much?
I think his NBA commissioner, Stern.
Yeah.
Stern at the end says, and he's right. Stern says, because we finished it last night.
Yeah.
He says, there's no doubt that the 90s Bulls took the NBA and put it on a global.
Uh-huh.
They were in like 70-something countries before then and like 250 after.
Yeah.
Part of that's the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like, out of the players, it's hard to compare LeBron. You can compare the ability conversation
all the
time.
Right, because he's standing on the shoulders of that.
But this guy did something and was something, whether now Nike and Gatorade and all of that obviously contributed.
Yeah.
They were masterful marketers. There was a branding and an imaging that was happening as well. But he delivered every time.
Yeah.
He delivered on the court every time, all the way to the last shot, you know. And like that, he had the right coach.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the right players around him. It was obvious in his early career he did not, you know, they would make it. And he needed Pippen and he needed Rodman. He could not have done it by himself. But Pippen and Rodman on the team without him probably are like the Jazz. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they're really good.
Well, they were. They fell short. They had 55 wins that one year, you know, and they fell short.
Can't seal the deal and finish it.
Yeah.
So, like, there is something unique. And I thought, I don't know, for me, like, the interview parts where he was like, guys, I may not be your role model. And, yeah, I did. I gave that guy a hard time. I'm a basketball player. I just felt like that we were better than this. That, like, and they all knew he was a jerk and he doesn't. I think what we're offended at is that he's unapologetic about that, because being a jerk.
Well, everybody else had seemingly like 20 years of perspective on their take, and it felt like he was still just there in the moment, still like, oh, man.
Well, they said that.
I got in, shake my hand, and I still like have beef with him.
Remember the guy, the author of Rare Air, who they were interviewing, who said the one thing he had more than anybody else was the ability to be present.
Mm-hmm.
They showed him walking in to game 7, and he's got headphones on. He's, loose as all get out, man. Like, he's just...
No, and we talked about that last podcast, and I agree that that's his best quality, is that he could take the last shot with no fear of, if I don't make this, it's going to affect my legacy. He didn't think that way.
No. David said, why would I worry about a shot I haven't taken?
Yeah.
Like, he somehow knew he was going to win, and yet didn't worry about it. And I think that freedom of it is something very unique. No, obviously he cares about his legacy. He's allowing these films to be released.
Well, I think he cares more now.
Yeah.
For sure. That's just part of getting older.
And maybe it's the 90s nostalgia of my childhood, but watching that, it reinforced to me this was the greatest sports dynasty, in my opinion, of all time. But that's because I was a teenager in the middle of it, probably. I remember watching all of them from the 92 I remember watching against the Suns, against Clyde Drexler. I remember watching them twice against the Jazz. I remember watching those games against the in the conference finals against the Knicks. Mm-hmm. I remember all of those with John Starks. All those, like, I remember all of it. I remember John Paxson was one of my favorite players. Hit that big shot. Pippen was my guy. I had a poster of Pippen in my room, so I didn't have a poster of Jordan.
Yeah,
but I've always loved the really good number two guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just I don't know. It makes sense to me.
And now you're an executive pastor.
Come on, guys.
Hold on.
I am the Scotty Pippen.
You're Scotty Pippen.
Oh my goodness! I did have this back injury. I don't know if
and
that,
you did sit out last week for a migraine.
I did.
And refused to go back in.
That bothered me, man. Yeah. When Pippen sat out and refused to go in, that was tough.
Man, they had to talk about it, but it felt like he got the short end of the straw as far as narrative, and it bugged me a little bit that Jordan didn't, I don't know, like the way he referenced him a couple times, I feel like he could have come to his aid a little more. And it just felt like he left him out there and threw him under the bus 20 years later. And I think Pippen has come out since then and said that he hated the way that he was portrayed. And I don't know. It's the thing is, like, documentaries have a narrative. So I think we grew up thinking, like, a documentary is just a thing where they just say facts and we look at historical. Like, documentaries have agendas now. And sure. we know that going in a little bit.
See, I don't see it. I see it as an autobiography. And I obviously,
but autobiographies depend on, yeah, it's like who is telling the story matters.
Yeah.
So if Jordan has Final Cut, you're going to see, it was the story of Jordan. Really, The Last Dance was pitched as the story of the Bulls, the last season of the Bulls in their dynasty.
Yeah.
But what it became was a Michael Jordan. How do you not have him lead the thing? But I'm just saying, I felt like a lot of those people, like you said, that he couldn't have won without them. And I felt like some of them got the short end of the stick. Horace Grant being one of the ones who I thought was just a glaring thing where he just left Horace out to dry, almost blamed him for
the whole. That's because Horace left and went to the Magic.
And he holds it against him. It's the whole thing. It's like, it's just business, but until it's not. Everything became very personal for Michael.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You think he'll come on the show maybe? And
That's the only way he can clear this up.
That's right.
Because we hold a massive audience in sway.
Oh, my goodness.
Michael, if you care about your legacy, you'll come on this show, set the record straight. Mm. Otherwise, I got a feeling those numbers, look, you're riding high now. I think it's $145 million a year he still makes.
Jeez.
From his brand. But listen, it could be $150. If you would just come on, let us know.
Also, can we borrow some money? Would you go to our Patreon account?
Oh, man.
You know, hey, speaking of, we had a great call last week with some of our patrons.
We did. We patronized them.
We did. It was fun. It was several who had wanted to show up, couldn't show up, but we had a couple on there, and we had a really good time.
It was. It was a blast. We're going to have to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So if you if you're thinking about becoming a patron, just know those Zoom calls are out there where you can just ask us anything and we'll talk about complete nonsense, but it'll be in a private Zoom call that only you get access to.
Yeah. Yeah. I was impressed how funny on your feet you were.
Speaking of throwing under the bus, I felt like there was a couple times I was like, am I throwing John under the bus here? Because I felt like I needed to keep driving the thing. And I was like, but I can't remember at one time in particular. I think I called attention to your house. Again, where I was saying, look at John's house versus where I'm sitting. And I was like, John, turn the camera and show him your pool. And I was like, am I being a jerk here? I almost called you after to be like, I'm sorry if I was being a jerk. I'm just being silly. You know, I don't care. You know, I wish I had a pool.
I played right into it. I said, you can't see my pool from here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so. It's 40 acres away.
Yeah.
No, you got to take the lawn cart to it.
No, I was trying to let the call come to me a little bit. And yeah, man, you were going after it. It was like I was your Pippin, you know. So
it's exactly like
you
that.
You were going to take the last shot and the first shot.
And I took some shots at you.
You landed about 50% of your jokes.
I punched you like he punched Steve Kerr, but you took it. And that's why. Listen, there was a moment when I punched you, but you took it. And I was like, you know what? I respect that guy. And that's when I knew we're going to win the championship.
I did, by the way, walk away with a lot. The Steve Kerr story is fascinating to me. Like that.
Steve Kerr it's funny how, you think of him as kind of just like this ordinary role player. I mean, he had some championship success, but just this idea that, like, as he's gone on, he was a great owner in Phoenix, GM rather. Then his pedigree's just grown. He was a great broadcaster. Mm-hmm. He just is an excellent person.
Yeah.
Like, you see him, even his social media presence.
Yeah.
He's very vocal. But he just seems to always stand for the right things. I don't think he's a good guy, man.
Yeah. I wonder if Steve needs a book.
He's just a winner.
Johnny, call him. Tell him you know a guy.
Me and Kerr, we're like this, man. He's up here with his friends. I'm down here. I'm the thumb.
You're the thumb. Yeah. Hey, guys. Oh, you're our friends, though.
And you are. You're our Pippin. We couldn't do it without you.
No, we couldn't.
What would be the point of doing a podcast
without listeners?
Yeah. Just speak, screaming into the ether.
Oh, my goodness. Just like making our opinion known into the great
beyond.
That's
what most podcasts are, by the way. So we're glad you're listening.
Yeah, it means a lot to us. Make sure you share it and check us out. We have a new website you can go to that's Talk About That Podcast.
All the episodes are archived there.
.com. And you can see various platforms by which you can access the content. If you're new, man, you got 113 episodes you can go back and listen to. I love hearing that. Someone's like, oh my gosh, I just discovered you. And it's like they're binging something on Netflix, you know.
And if they're going backwards, that'd be interesting. If you go backwards, you see us kind of devolve. You can see our ideas. Well, and you see us getting hopefully a little bit better at it along the way. We get a little bit better at conversation. Who knows, though?
Yeah. I think they've been good from the get-go. But they're every episode's different, you know. And
that's true. So, well, and we used up a lot of our good stories in the first few episodes. We had good stories and maybe less great at conversation, and now the conversation is good, and we're like, did we already tell this story?
There are times I wonder if we've told it before, but...
Yeah, that's okay.
But, you know, I also learned as a pastor many years ago, the idea that someone remembers what I said, Johnny, the good news is they didn't, so that's I can true. Say it again.
Plus,
know?
It's about the rendition of the story. John, that's a callback.
Guys, that's what we call a callback.
The powerful play goes on.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, hey, man, and so share it and be a part of what we're doing there. You can go to our Patreon account if you'd like to support us and be a part of our calls, and we send you a couple just goodies for what you do there, books and CDs and stuff like that. So I'm actually one of our new patrons. We told them on the call, I'm sending them, I only have 10 copies, I think.
The
newest
book. I'm
sending them a new book that has yet to be released even to
the
market.
This is like a galley copy. Is that what those are called?
No, it's an actual hardcover release.
Okay.
That the book release got postponed because of the quarantine.
Right.
And it was going to be on the Today Show, the author. And so he hopefully still will be. But a fascinating book and a great story. So, hey, those patrons, Joni, are getting something nobody else has even seen. You know?
Man.
My goodness. And Michael Jordan autographed it. That's what's crazy.
Why would he?
In a twist. I don't know, Johnny.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
When they came that way.
It's not his book.
No, it means a lot, though, that you listen and send us your comments and your topics. Go and leave a review. It means a lot to us when you do that. And we appreciate all of you guys for being a part of what we do every week on
Talk About That.
You're fearfully and wonderfully made. God looks at your heart, not your jean size. Do you know the verses, yet still stress over your body? Oh, I get it. I was raised in church, but I struggled with food, eating disorders, and my body for decades. I'm Heather Creekmore, host of the Compared To podcast, where we talk about all things body image and comparison from a biblical perspective. We get real about the pressure to focus on appearance in a culture where looks seem to matter most. Whether you're wrestling wrinkles or battling the scale, Compared To is the show for you. You'll laugh a little and be encouraged a lot. If you're ready to stop comparing and start living, visit lifeaudio.com to listen and subscribe.